Blog Talk Radio.
Fully slated out for me, so I couldn't get to the broadcaster's luncheon today.
Well, I'd like to have, but I couldn't make that one.
Well, congratulations and happy birthday and many more.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, and I'll just take another 20. It'd be good.
That'd be nice.
Well, the Phillies gave you a sweep of the of our Atlanta Braves. And,
yes, they did. They killed them today.
Well, they did. You know, it was very interesting, Frank and Don. I was on the road, and I had stopped off at the QT right at the entrance of 85 over in Hamilton Mill. And I went in and got a coffee, and I got a smoothie to take with me. And there were two outs when I walked into the QT, and it was 4-2, or I guess it was 4-3 then. And I came out, and they had scored 5 runs.
Right.
And, you know, they won 10-5 in a big sweep. The pitcher, you know, today just for the Braves, he just couldn't get things going. But I think, you know, it's very interesting, and I've always felt this, how important that first batter in the game is, no matter who it is. And today, Cesar Hernandez really set it up because he had a first pitch of the game, sets up executes a perfect bunt, gets the first, steals second, comes in on a single, they got a run. They're on the board right away. And I'll tell you, as much as we've criticized the relief pitching, that bullpen, I watched the 13th inning the other night. It's a shame Cole Hamels, he pitched a gem, couldn't have won.
I was just going to say exactly the same thing. Nothing after nine, and the poor guy. I mean, this is 2 years in a row now that he's you know, really struggled for his club to get some runs for him. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And then they won 5-2 and then 10-5 today. But this kid that we've talked about, Ken Giles, what, 23 years old, started at Reading, then he went to Lehigh Valley, throws consistently 100 miles an hour, even hit a 101 in one game. And the whole key is, what did we say about this bullpen? You've got to throw strikes. And the guys
right
now are throwing strikes, and they're getting the outs. Simple as all
yeah
that.
Well, I don't know if you had a chance to scan the Inquirer today, but, you know, talking about, you know, the general manager situation and, you know, what's going to happen there and what's going to happen with the Phillies. I guess he got a little pressure off himself in the last three games, but you know, they talked about, you know, Dave Montgomery staying too long with too many people. We've talked about it on this show.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say
yeah
for, what, 2 or 3 months, that he
right
fell in love with players that are at the end of their line. I mean, you can't just build a club that's going to do anything with players that are all over 35.
No, absolutely. And the one positive is that when you look at the pitching, at least the relief pitching, the guys other than Papelbon, the guys that are really contributing now are
right
all mid-20s to, you know, maybe 28 at the oldest, 29. So I think there you have a foundation for the future, you know, with Diekman and Giles, and even Bastardo seems to have straightened himself out, because I know the guys doing the games were saying that he was just lights out during spring training, and you guys were there. You saw him quite a bit, and but it's very encouraging. And the other thing is Cesar Hernandez has gotten to play a couple of games in a row, and he's had a couple of hits, I think, in each game. So
on the other side
yeah
of the ledger, Roger, would be, you know, the Braves got off to another good start, but boy, they are really struggling now.
They are, and it's the pitching, Don. That's what the big problem is.
Well, losing three straight to the Phillies does not help the cause any. And, well, I guess their biggest lead was, even though the National League East is a disaster, the Mets broke an 8-game losing streak today, beat the Cardinals 3-2. And but, you know, it's just to the point now where the National League East, I mean, any one of those top three, Washington, Atlanta, you know, they can win it. Because they can win it on the last day because they're all within
exactly
a half game or a game of each other.
Exactly. You know, the team that really is surprising is in the American League, and that's the Royals. I think,
oh,
what
boy
are they run? 10 in a row, and they're on a roll.
And I tell you, I saw them last night and a little bit today playing against Detroit, and they took that series to heart. And one of the things that the analysts have really emphasized is that, you know, they didn't give up the first 30 days of the season when they had no hitting whatsoever. These young players just didn't, whether they were, you know, presser or whether they were nervous or what, but Kansas City stayed with them. And, boy, when they caught fire, they moved from the cellar at about 8 games behind to first place.
Was it last year or the year before, or when they won the World Series, the Red Sox got off to that horrendous start in April and into May and then turned it around and wound up, they won the World Series, I believe, didn't they, after that tremendous or horrific start 1 year?
Right, but but I don't think they're going to win anything this year.
No, I don't either. What about the Rays? What do you think? See, I still think they're going to be okay.
I don't think so.
I think we're past that point.
Yep, I think Joe's done a great job, but too many things against him right now. Even though he's very fortunate that he's in the American League East, and nobody there has taken off either. The Yankees are playing mediocre baseball. Red Sox are playing less than mediocre. So, you know, he's in the hunt in the sense that nobody's playing well. But you look at that loss column, and boy, oh boy, they've got a lot of room to make up before they even get to 500, much less challenge for, you know, the American League pennant.
You know, unfortunately, Don, last night's game and today's game, there were so many errors. There's just they're not even playing good fundamental little league ball right now.
That's right. That was their strength, pitching and defense.
Yep.
You know, they'd win the 3-2 games. They'd win the 2-1 games, 1-0. Even though they didn't hit, they won those games because they played great defense.
Yep. I mean, dropping the ball. A bouncer to the shortstop, and he drops the ball before he can even get it. Hey, it gets in the glove, drops it out, and can't get it to first base. Into a wall instead of putting your glove out to catch a ball. You know, it's just fundamentals. And, you know, Joe, when you look at Joe, he looks so disgusted, but yet he tries to put that face on. And, you know, everything's going to come around. That great posture that he has, and it's worked for him before, and I'm sure it'll work for him somehow. But, you know, they've never been in the cellar before, but now the joke around here is what has 20 legs and lives in the cellar, and then, of course, it's the Rays.
he's a great manager, and it's just one of those things that caught up with him right from the beginning, and really before the beginning of the season. I don't know about the defensive side because they always had pretty good defensive players. And you're right, this year they've really struggled defensively. But, boy, oh, you want to see a minor league team on the field, you should see the New York Mets. I mean, they have play after play after play, just total little league. I mean, it's. I don't think they have 3 major league players on that New York Mets team. It's ridiculous. Last night they had a ground ball to second base. Murphy boots it, rolls behind him, turns around, picks it up, throws, going to throw it to first base, but there's nobody there.
Yeah.
I mean, things you've never seen in your life unless you're in a little league game.
Right.
And that's the way
and then
they're
they
playing.
Play the Phillies and they look like world beaters.
Yeah. That shows you how bad they all are.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, it's on another note. It's a sad note that the passing of Tony Gwynn yesterday.
Very sad.
Yeah,
boy, there was a leader in every category. Not only as a baseball leader and a dominant player, but a family person, a guy that you can respect in every avenue of his life. And I was not happy to see, but from an enlightening position, the fact that they talked about him getting this throat cancer and mouth cancer and so forth from chewing tobacco when he was playing,
right.
And they I thought for a period of time in the major leagues they outlawed that. I thought they had said, you know, no more tobacco chewing, but from what the article said when they did a rundown on Tony Gwynn, They talked about a number of the players, not only on his team, but other teams as well, that still chew tobacco and can't stop.
Yeah, that's unfortunately that's
well,
very.
Well, you know, you hear Randy, Hall of Famer
Johnson
for the who? For the Cowboys, Randy.
Okay.
You know who I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the defensive tackle from Maryland, wasn't it? You know.
Right. Yeah, Maryland.
Yeah. He advertises a tobacco less a non tobacco of chaw. And
oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, he I hear him on the radio a lot on Sirius XM NFL, and he talks about it. And but it's non tobacco. But he said he's been dipping for a long time. And that's what it is. You know, you take a dip and you put it in your mouth, but it doesn't have tobacco. But a good friend of mine that I worked with for years, he's had serious oral cancer, can't speak that well. And it was he was smoking unfiltered Camels all those many years, and it takes its toll. And I do believe that Dave Montgomery had oral cancer. And they took some bone, I think, out of a leg is what I read, and to reconstruct his jaw. One of the important statistics that I heard about about him was about Senior was that he only struck out, I think it was in 75 or 7,900 at bats. He only struck out 300 times.
And the other factor there was that he struck out three times in one game once. And you know who the pitcher was that struck him out three times in one game?
Who's that?
Bob Walsh that died last week.
Bob, isn't that amazing?
Yep.
Boy,
he's the only one that ever struck him out three times.
Well, we said it comes in threes, right? Don Zimmer, Bob Welsh, and now Tony Gwynn.
Yep, no question about it. Three pretty good players and big parts of baseball. So, but you know the funny thing about the chaw was the fact that a lot of them get into it, especially in the Southwest, the South and Southwest. You know, they start that stuff at 16, 15 years old when they're playing almost Babe Ruth League or high school baseball. You know, most of the people they talked about in the article with Tony Gwynn say, "Oh, well, I started when I was 16." I started when I was 17, and, you know, I haven't been able to stop.
Yeah,
well, you're right, Don. They that's when they do start. And you know, they want to imitate the big leaguers for doing it the kids do, and now, you know, years later they pay the price.
Right. Well, they really, really tried to emphasize the bubble gum thing. I mean, they really try to get them to, you know, chew bubble gum instead of
right.
You know, a chaw. But as I say, a lot of the youngsters from the Southwest and the South, they take it up at a very young age. It's hard. I guess it's harder. And it's a dirty, filthy habit. I mean,
yep.
Holy smokes, I can't think of anything, you know, worse than chewing tobacco.
Oh, I agree. And you have to have a bucket or a cup to spit.
Yeah, right.
The one I was talking about was Hall of Famer Randy White. He's the one that does the commercials.
Yeah, right.
Oh, listen, you guys will love
one.
This. Today, I was driving up 85, and people were coming from the game, and there was a SUV, and it had a Cowboys, one of those stickers, you know, where you can see from inside out. On the back window, it had a Cowboys on one side and an Eagles on the other. And then a Phillies T on the body, the tailgate, and then a couple of Phillies decals. And then on the side window, it had the Flyers logo with one of those decals.
Oh my God.
I pull up next because we're, you know, stuck in traffic. So, and I pull up next to the guy, and I said, "Go Phillies. They swept the Braves." Guy gives me the high five, and he's got a Phillies cap on. But I said to Rita tonight, I wanted to talk to him. And find out, what is this, a divided house? Cowboys and Eagles in one car? Are you kidding me?
You've got to be kidding me about that.
Oh, here we are.
Hey, Tommy's here.
Good morning. Sorry I'm late, guys. I just had to do the baseball game today. Rays lose 2-0 right now, and things aren't looking too good for the Rays right now. And traffic and rain down here, Don, you, Frank, you know it's a total mess, but we made it. Everything's great. We're looking forward to having a great show tonight. Thank you guys for being patient.
You're safe, Tommy. That's the important
thing.
I'm surprised that you didn't just pick it up
on our new phone and do it from the car.
Well, I got to send some stuff to Metro. I'll figure, well, it's a bit, sending from home tonight, it's just a relaxing time. Patty says hello to you. And also Matt Joyce, I talked to Matt the other day. Matt says hello to everybody up there. So he's tough with their Rays right now, guys. It's just Alex pitches his guts out and no offense today. I mean, Evan Longoria, offensive blunders, base running mistakes have been – you know, I was watching that game today, base running mistakes. Isn't that up to the first base coach, George Hendrick, to tell him what's going on?
Yep. Tommy, you know,
well,
we can't.
First
we
base, I don't think so, because when you're coming down to first base, you can see the whole field. You don't
right.
need
I mean,
anybody
well,
to tell
was
you.
On first, he was on first base, or I think he was on one out, and he was on, you know, I think it was a double, and it wasn't up to Tom Foley. Look at their third base coach, because you're heading down the third base line. That's what a coach is there for, to tell the runner what's going on. The runner looks behind him, guys, he's going to get thrown out.
Yeah. Well,
Tommy, we can't worry about the guys that don't do things right. We have somebody on the line right now that's done everything right this year.
Okay.
Oh, my God, I can't believe you. I gave you a soft cushion like that. You can't come into it?
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Like the welcome head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm, Mr. Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, good evening, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you
doing? You see how quick our host is at picking up on things? He's almost as quick as you are on our special guest that gets on with you.
Lawrence, too much coffee down there.
Lawrence, Tommy was a little late getting to the program tonight because he had to stop at the market and get blackberries for his phone.
That's on a to-do list tomorrow, guys. Trust me about that. Frank, will you see me Saturday? What can I say, Lawrence? Biggest game of the year. Team's playing great football. Packed house. Need I say more? Orlando's in town.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a great game this weekend. We've been waiting to get these guys back down here in our house, and it'll be a great time to play them. We're playing at a high level, and we're on a four-game win streak, and we're trying to make it five. So it's actually a good deal to have Orlando come down at this time of the year.
Well, I ask you every week, Lawrence. I'll do it again this week. How did you come through last weekend as far as injuries were concerned?
We did okay. Guys are a little banged up. We kind of scaled back a little bit this week. Just trying to get them mentally prepared to do all the right things and push all the right buttons come this weekend. But we came out really good injury wise, and I think we'll be at full strength and ready to go.
Lawrence, a highlight of practice today. I saw Coach Chris Hovind throw a pass, but I was telling Ben it looked like a Mauer duck out there.
Yeah. That's not
Mauer
his thing.
Ben and I start cracking up. Ben Slogan's the public legend for the Storm, does a great job for keeping us up to date what's going on up there. But I said, Ben, look over there. I said, Chris is throwing an end-over-end pass. I should have said, you always want to be a quarterback. Now's your chance.
Lawrence, this week you're going to be on local TV. Do you think that will have any effect on the guys? Will that give them any kind of enticement to play better? Or I don't see how they could play better than the last Philly game. Mm. I mean, my God.
Oh.
Yeah, it's always an incentive to actually get some television exposure, especially the Bright House Channel here in the Tampa Bay area. And it gives our fans a chance, that the ones that can't make it to the game, a chance to see us play and get them fired up, and you know, hopefully that'll get them to come out in our last ball game against Cleveland. But it's a good deal. Our guys are excited. We're looking forward to the challenge, and you know, just to be on TV is just added incentive.
That's wonderful. Bright House done for the Tampa Bay Storm, especially these last two games. I think it's fantastic. Lawrence, the play of our quarterback, Randy Hibbert, has been spectacular, at least about the last four games in a row.
Oh, yeah. And Randy's done a great job. He's actually doing a great job preparing himself each week. You know, even through the mistakes that he's made, you know, he doesn't let him get him down, and he's just coming through for us. He's beating people with his legs, so he can pull it down and run it. So that gives him a triple threat, you know. And he's doing a great job. The guys are right around him. He's just a big part of our success these last couple of weeks.
We could say, the hook here is, I think, the defensive line. I mean, they came out big against came up big last week, and their guys are fired up again. They're going to come up big again this week versus Orlando.
Oh, yeah. Our defensive line, they're anxious. One thing is that I think you had Cleaver on today, and Cleaver, he's a little upset because we kind of sat him down because of injury. Last week, and he's anxious to get back out there and play. He'll be firing on all cylinders come this weekend, and he's a big part of our defense, a big part being, you know, leadership and with this example of his playing ability. So our guys are fired up on the defensive side of the ball, and they've been playing very well, and I'm anxious to see them play and keep up the good play.
Orlando team, the Predators, it seems that their quarterback has no problem with being a double threat, or even triple threat, if you will, with being able to take off and run. How do you plan to defense against that?
Well, you know, anytime you go against a guy that has that kind of ability, it's tough on a defense. But you just have your guys to play at a high-energy, fast-paced level. And Coach Hovan and Coach K, they have our guys doing that. And then as long as they can continue that kind of play, I think that we'll be just fine. You know, and we just have to, you know, just play at a high energy, have a high level, playing fast all the way through, and not taking off any plays. You know, our guys, they're very in tune of what they're going to be facing with Bernard Morris, that quarterback. We had a guy like that last year. You know, Adrian McPherson was the same way. Puts a lot of pressure on the defense. So you really have to pay attention to every detail, knowing that, you know, he can beat you making plays with his feet. And we'll have a couple of things that they'll have ready to kind of keep him within the pocket and keep him contained.
Good. Hey, you're going to go,
Frank. Mark, when you talk about, you know, sitting a player last week because he was a little nicked up, you wanted him ready for this week. Maybe you'd explain to some of the folks listening that are not very familiar with not only the Storm but the league in whole. Your rosters aren't like football rosters. They don't understand how many people are on the roster and how important it is for everybody to be able to play. Maybe you'd explain the situation there.
Well, you know, we have other guys. You know, we have a 24-man roster. And with that said, you have to have other guys that have to step up. You know, in key roles, they step up in big roles, and which Rashard Duke, he played great for us his first ball game as an arena football player, stepped in and helped out last week, taking and filling the shoes of Richard Cleaver. You know, just to get Richard back healthy this week is key for our defense and everything. But you know, with that said, we have guys that are behind the scenes that have to come in during key times of the season, just like that past week, to step in and be able to contribute. And so the team can't miss a beat. You know, to step up, play big. We have some other guys that actually have stepped up due to injury. And now we're on a four-game win streak.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that said, you know, guys just have to fill in and accept that role and just continue to keep this thing going in the right direction.
All right, so sure we're going to get that in the right directions. Like we said today earlier in practice, like the game of golf right now, we're 4 under par. Coming up to this par 5, we're going to eagle this hole. And then a couple of players here, we're going to get a hole in one. I said, how can you do that in a par 5? You can't do it. Up there. But on a serious note, tell the guys, what's your famous, as a player, Tampa Bay versus Orlando? I know it's a championship, but do you have a favorite moment playing against these guys as a player?
As a player, I've had many games against these guys, and you know, but the championship game in 94 was my first, and by me experiencing that at a young time in my career, only my second year in arena football, and winning the championship was huge in my development in this league, because you know, once you win it one time, you want to win it multiple times, and I was blessed to play with a lot of great guys that actually taught me the game of arena football, and being able to win it that early gave me that drive and that hunger to continue to strive for the best, and to be in the last game and win it all. And that's one thing I'm trying to instill in this team here, that we have the ability, no matter how we started out, how you finish, and the guys are doing a great job of doing exactly that right now at this point.
I know. Lawrence,
do you think the losses, when they happen during the season, can wind up being a positive, that it turned the focus of the team around to prove everybody how good they are?
Well, I think, you hate to lose at anything. You know, I hate to lose at checkers, marbles, or anything.
Right here.
But you have to look at it as a positive. I didn't beat the guys up. You know, yes, we were going through some things and some things wasn't happening for us. But during the course of that time, we only really played bad one game, and that was the Portland game, which if we came out and played at a level, I thought we could have easily won. But we didn't play with any energy, and that was the most disappointing time during that whole stretch. But we took the positives from those losses and actually build on them. You know,
mm-hmm.
we didn't beat our guys up and say, hey, we need to change the whole thing. No, we looked at and we analyzed what we had over the bye week, and we just kind of reevaluated ourselves. And now that reevaluation period during that bye week, it's starting to pay off. The guys are starting to believe in themselves, and they're playing as a team on all phases of the game. If you look at our wins, you know, adversity has hit us in each one of them, and we've overcome it. And that's just a sign of a young team maturing and doing the things right and learning how to fix things when they go wrong. And I think those losses, we've learned a lot from having those losses early in the season, and actually now it's paying off.
Well, yeah, it has a lot to say for the coaching staff, and you are – your first year. I mean, you've always played with that intensity. You've always played with that calmness. And I don't see at any point of the game where under Markham and under Dave, at some point in time, we used to see the jitters almost towards the last 2 minutes of the game. Sometimes we'd see jitters. We see you and Hovan and Kay out there calming them down, telling them to calm down, telling them what to do. And I think it's also a great thing to have somebody who has played the game as well as you have and as long as you have to be the head coach, and it's really paying off.
Amen. Thank you. I really appreciate it. But, you know, I always give the credit to my coaching staff and my guys. It's really not even about me. I'm behind the scenes type of guy. I don't want to even be a focus on me, though. But the guys have responded well to coaching, and it's actually a blessing to be in this position and to have the group of guys that I do have. They responded well, and they deserve to actually be in this position to where we can control our own destiny to actually accomplish some great things this year.
Well, I know we're going to accomplish great things, like we said before, Lawrence, when they had a tough time. It's just we'll get them on the back nine. So far, the back nine's been spectacular. We owe Orlando, I was telling us to be, we owe Orlando so many times. It's going to happen Saturday night, big crowd. Hey, Lawrence, I can't wait for it right now. Get it going.
Oh, I can't wait neither. But we're gonna take these days and prepare.
Yes,
it'll be here shortly.
Tommy, you ought to reemphasize the fact that the game is going to be on television locally, and what's where they can see it.
Okay, so it's going to be Bright House Sports Network, and usually I think it's on Channel 47. Beyond that, but I think it's I don't know who's doing the game. I think it's. I don't know, but Ben probably have it released tomorrow to get everybody tomorrow with the Bright House 47 is going to be on it. But it's going to be great to have a local televised arena football game in the Tampa Bay market, which is a home of so many great teams. Lawrence played on them, and so many great teams in the Tampa Bay market for arena football. And that's going to be fun to see replays actually on TV, not the arena replays, but replays actually on TV, Lawrence. I'm excited for it, and I just wish it was Saturday night right now. I gotta get myself calmed down now until Saturday right now. It's not going to be good.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, fellas, you couldn't get a better guy to be an analyst on that game for Bright House than our executive producer and head of everything, Frank Carroll, who knows
yes.
the game, attends the game, coaches the game. I'll mm-hmm. tell you what an asset he'd be to Bright House.
Oh, definitely that way. There'd be. I'd have to babysit the kids. I'd love to babysit the kids, Frank. So that would be good.
Bring
you know.
Them with them.
Yeah, that would be great up there and that. But Lawrence, I have a good luck charm. James Harold and I always do the DB backs. We say woo, so we're doing that for straight weeks. So we did it today. So that's our good luck charm. That's our Kate Smith guys. Right? That's our Kate Smith before. So we're gonna be good. I can't wait for Lawrence. Lawrence, thank you for coming on. Have a great rest of the week, and watch out for that coffee down there. The machine's actually working down there now. I had a cup of
All right, don't jinx it right now.
Good coach.
Right.
Good luck, coach. Bring home another win.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right, bring home a win.
Yes, sir. Best luck to you, Lawrence. God bless, and go get him
we'll
on Saturday
night.
We'll
be there to support you, Lawrence.
Yes, we will.
All right,
definitely.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Really
yes.
All right, buddy.
Okay,
fellas, I just want to give you a couple of notes that I just
sure.
found out. I know a guy that I think Frank is very familiar with, especially Jack Devine, passed away.
Mm.
Played at West Catholic, was a coach at played at Villanova, was a coach for Jack Kraft, and he just passed away down in Sea Isle.
Oh.
And also, I just saw the announcement, and I think it's about middle of August. I mean, Don's the only one. That could probably take advantage of it. They're going to have a open memorial to Jack Ramsey at St. Joe's. And what is that Hagen Hall at St. Joe's now, Don?
I'm not sure. To be honest with you, Roger, I'm not sure whether they named it Hagen Hall or whether I don't know exactly what it is.
I don't either. But I think that's what it said. Here, I'll even check it out. But anyway, I thought that especially, you know, with Don being up there and with how much time he spent in the Big Five, that I'm sure you'll be hearing about it, Don. But
well, not only hearing about it, we'll certainly all get there, too. And
yes.
I know Dan Baker will keep us abreast, definitely, of what's going to happen and when it is. And,
yeah, it's going to be on August 13th at 5 p.m. at Hagen Arena. And it's
wow.
going to
yeah.
be a an open memorial service.
Mm.
And, of course, he died on April 29th in Naples. And a graduate of Upper Darby High School, fellas.
Mm.
Great.
Wow.
In Delaware County, just like us.
Yeah, and one of a long string of coaches from St. Joe's that moved up into the NBA. And, of course, he was really one of the pioneers in that area. And a great career at St. Joe's, great career in the NBA, won an NBA championship, great analyst for ESPN
mm-hmm.
and TV, and really a terrific, terrific story. And, you know, you think about Jack and you think about his dedication to athletics, not only from a standpoint of coaching, but personal. I mean, he was in as good a shape at
sure.
75, 80 If it hadn't been for cancer, I mean, you know, he ran every day, he biked every day. He was a conditioning guy.
Yeah,
didn't he have a place in Ocean City, Don?
Yes, he did.
The boardwalk.
Yeah.
He and Matty Gukas both lived in very close to each other.
Oh, how about because he always
had the good fortune to have had him for social studies at St. James and also as my basketball coach at St. James.
Wow.
And I followed him to St. Joe's 3 years after my next-door neighbor, Jack McKinney.
Was Jack McKinney your next-door neighbor?
Yep.
Wow.
Jack's father was chief of detectives in the city of Chester when my dad was the mayor.
Wow.
How about that?
We have the illustrious and lovely chief on with us tonight.
I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine. Does a great job of the Sun Sports. He should be the top analyst in the National Hockey League. And most important thing, Bobby Chief Taylor, have you been playing golf? We got to go tee it up one of these days, Chief. It's that time of year right now.
I hear you, Tommy. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, Chief. And if there could have been a better conclusion, not only the last series, but the semifinals as well of the National Hockey League, I've never seen it.
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, the games, you know what's really sad for me is that all the playoffs are played that way. They play it on the edge. They play it with speed. They play it with passion. They play it with a lot of physical play. And that's what the game of hockey is supposed to be about. And for me, it bothers me because they say they don't change the game the way they call it in the regular season, but anybody that has watched hockey at all and watches the regular season as opposed to the playoff hockey, you know that's not true. And playoff hockey is just incredible. I think that's where we gain most of our fans. When people watch the game for the first time and they usually go to a playoff game, they get hooked really quickly.
All right. That's for sure. Chief, did you notice in the finals that Richie and Marty look kind of slow? Because a lot of pucks got by Richie and Dominic Moore and Marty St. Louis when the Kings woke out in their zone out there.
Well, you know what? Rangers was a great story. They really were. I don't think anybody, even themselves, really predicted that they could go this deep in there. Henry Lundqvist really kept them alive. I mean, I really thought that we might see another losing goaltender win this Conn Smythe trophy like I think it was Hextall, the last guy to do that. Oh, no, J.S. Seguir won it after him. But, I mean, Lundqvist was the only reason why the Rangers ever even got to that far and even got into five games. I mean, he was just tremendous. So I watched most of the finals. You know, I mean, the Rangers played hard, don't get me wrong, and you know, they had some stuff. But the L.A. was just too big, too strong, too structured for them, and I think that was just a big difference.
Next year's going to be us, Chief.
I did a show on Monday night about the playoffs and so forth, and away from the game itself, you were talking about Henry Lundqvist. I watched every one of the post-game shows all the way through. I've never listened to a pro athlete that is more articulate, more decisive in what he wants to say, and explains exactly what's going on, and gives all the credit to everybody else. And he's the calmest interview on national television I've ever seen.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, I mean, he's tremendous. Totally. He's always in my top three all the time. Yeah, you know, and when you listen to him, you know, I mean, here's a guy that has a pretty good handle on what he means to the team and what his role is and how important he is to it without trying to be, well, I did my job and they didn't do that. You know, that type of thing. He knows, but he also understands that, you know, that a lot of the success is accredited to his defense and his forwards as well. I mean, they have to play a certain degree of efficiency for him to be as good as he is. But he just keeps making those key saves. And you know, you guys have followed this game long enough. If you've got a goaltender back there that you know is going to bail you out when you make a mistake, 90% of the time, you're not afraid to make that mistake. So you play a such free and easy game. You can play a much more open style that will probably help your success rather than play a really tight-lipped, you know, sphincter-tighty game that, you know, you, if you don't have somebody back there that can bail you out, you don't take the chances, you don't play as free, and you don't play as fast because you're worried that you've got to get back to help the guy out. But with Henry, you can just play your own game because he's going to bail you out all the time.
But isn't that funny, Chief, because the head coach of the Rangers got knocked out in the first round. He took over for John Tortorella, and look what he got to Rangers for the Stanley Cup final. Question, I guess, of the year, Chief, do you think Torts will find another job in the NHL?
Well, you know what? It's a funny thing you should say that, Tommy, because I was watching and these so-called experts on that NHL network. And,
oh, geez.
You know, when Tortorella was fired, everybody, the so-called experts, said, well, now the Rangers can play a wide, much more wide-open game. They don't have to block as many shots. You know, they can play a much more offensive game, which they're better suited to. Well, every series, I didn't watch every game until I got to the finals, but every series there was two or three games. Every single one of these so-called experts kept praising the Rangers and how many shots they blocked and how well they played in their own zone. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, you're the same idiots that chastised Tortorella for having them play that way,
yep.
And now they're getting to the Stanley Cup final because they are playing that way. It was just ridiculous. But
well,
as far as him getting
Chief,
another job,
there was a portion of that third period, the final game. I mean, the pressure that was on them was for, I mean, five consecutive minutes, I'm going to say, where they had three, four, five people within 10 feet of them. And he put on a show that you can't believe.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was incredible. He just actually got overwhelmed. He was, you know, for me, it was almost like that J.S. Jagr when he was with Anaheim, how he played. But, you know, it's also, too, when you're getting that much action, you know, you get into a flow. It's really weird. I mean, being, you know, having been playing that position, the more shots you get, you're more into a flow. You don't really feel it. It's the ones where you're getting the anywhere from 18 to 24 shots a game where you're getting one shot every 3 or 4 minutes. That's the game that's the most hard to play because your concentration has to be dead on. You can't afford to give up a weak goal if it so happens because right away you know that if you're getting 22 shots and you give up three goals or four goals, they're going to be looking hard at the goaltender. When you have 40 shots and you give up 3 or 4 goals, they're looking hard at the forwards and the defense for not helping them out as much. So with Henry there, he was in a role, but you know what, Don? I think it was the quality of saves that he was making. You know, I mean, you can get a lot of shots, and you're from the outside, but he was making those ones in front of the net in the slot area, those point blankers that were had those guys just shaking their head.
He was spectacular. Reminds me of old Bernie Perante's Chief in the against that Boston Bruin days. Because Flyers basically had no offense except for Rick McLeish back in '74. And it basically, Bernie Perron was save after save after save. And it frustrated Phil Esposito and Bobby Orr. And to tell Phil, that you always to see Phil that story, that he always said, that damn Bernie Perron cost me a cup.
I know. I mean, I can still remember that great right toe save he made on Ken Hodge late in the game when Hodge came down the right wing. I can still see it. Ben was he was unbelievable. I mean, he was the best goalie in the world those 2 years.
Oh, my God. Only the Lord saved more than Bernie Perron. I still got my bumper sticker.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it down in the Lightning office because someone else, Mr. Wickett, would probably tear it up on me.
You know, talking about
Let's
the
get back
Flyers,
to your bread and butter, the Lightning. What do the Lightning need to get back in the hunt now? They sort of kept it going all during the year, 13-14, and what do you think? What do they have to look for now to take it to the next level?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's the experience. It's going to be immense to them. You try to tell them. I mean, even John Cooper, you know, I mean, yeah, he says, yeah, you know, we played a lot of high-level games in the Calder Cup and the Calder Cup Finals. And yes, you did, but, you know, it's still not the same because, A, when you're in the American League, you're playing in front of maybe 8,000 people. you might have four reporters covering the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to, it's not televised.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's not a nation watching. Whereas in the NHL, especially when you got a Canadian team in there, as you guys know, I mean, when Montreal and the Lightning played today, you know, you had not only the English-speaking, the French-speaking, but it was the last Canadian team left in the playoffs. So you had everybody from Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, all those guys.
Yeah.
You had the press probably outnumbered almost half the crowd that these guys played
yep.
in front. So that kind of a pressure and all the hoopla and everything that's associated with the Stanley Cup playoffs. You don't expect it. You don't understand it until you go through it. And I just and then each team level their level of play just goes that much higher. And I think that they were absolutely stunned by all that and what happened. And I think having gone through it now, they'll have a better understanding what they have to get to. And I think that's going to help them immensely. You know, obviously they got to help. I think they're going to need some help on defense, Don. I'm not sure Sammy Salah will come back. You know, Sammy's what, 38 now? 38,
right.
30. I think he turns 39. I think he turned 39 this spring. So, you know, I don't think he'll come back. They've got a couple of young guys in that Schuster, you know, and, you know, Barberio. Are they ready to take a regular role? You know, I'm not so sure. And so if they think of anything along the free agent line, I wouldn't be surprised to see them try and get a defenseman or two.
Well, Chief, how about Jonathan Drouin in our system right there? I think it's be a breakout year, and also the year Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson should be a co-winner of the Rookie of the Year trophy for the NHL, the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, I mean those two kids are incredible. I mean, unbelievable player. Andre Palat absolutely just blew my socks off. He was a good player, you know, but never saw the offensive side that he had until you know like January is when he really took off, but. Jonathan Drouin is an interesting case. Again, he's only 19 years old, and he had a terrible camp last year, Tommy. I don't think he impressed anybody. I think he was in awe. I mean, I think it overwhelmed him a little bit. I mean, he was a tremendous junior, and we've seen a ton of those guys come here. He's a nice talent. He's a very, very good skater. He's very good with the puck. He has great vision and everything. But again, he's only 19, and, you know, he'll probably stick with us next year because it's stupid for him to go back to junior. And you know, because he's not learning anything there. He's too good for those players. And so he's going to have – and because of the way the draft's set up, he's got to stay in the National Hockey League while he's still junior eligible or else he has to go back. So he'll play. And hopefully, you know, he'll come around like Stamkos. I mean, Steven, I don't think he got his first goal until January of his first year. And so he's got a real chance to come around. And I think with him waiting in the wings as well, that probably eased the burden of trading Marty, St. Louis, in, at the deadline because they have a kid coming up. And, you know, this is a very patient group. They're waiting. You know, they want to build one for the long run, as we all know, and not just the short run. And, you know, I think he'll play, but I don't know how much he'll play. It always depends on how quickly he adapts to the NHL.
Next
hey, Bobby, I've
right.
got a question for you about, and this is from a fan's perspective. Tell us the difference or compare the two cities that you were an analyst for on television, the Flyers and Tampa, and what's the difference between the two cities from hockey, from a broadcast perspective?
Well, you know, I think for the biggest difference, I mean, our hockey fans are very, very passionate. But for me, there's no place like Philadelphia. You know, they can talk about the bleacher bums or whatever they call them in the Garden, you know, with the Celtics and the Bruins. And, you know, and the Rangers are tough. I understand that. Philadelphia is a very tough city to play in. We all know that. But what I feel, it makes you a better athlete. In there as a player because they want to win. There's no question they want to win. But they have a unique talent of understanding who's busting their butt and who's just going through the motions. I mean, you guys know for years they did not like Mike Schmidt because he was so smooth and so good at his position. It looked like he wasn't trying. And they didn't like that. You know, right. He finally got around to liking him at the, you know, near the last half of his career, last quarter of his career, because he was so damn good, they finally realized it. But as far as the broadcaster is concerned, the passion in Philly is incredible. I mean, to this day, I remember, this is a funny story, I went through the Ben Franklin Toll one time coming back from New Jersey. I went over to visit Clarkie and the guys. And I came back, and I never, you know, you have to give the dollar to get the change and everything. The guy recognized.
Yeah, that was all before Easy Pass.
Yeah, you're right. And the guy starts talking, oh, Chief, how you doing like this? The horses, the traffic's hanging up for a mile, and the horns are blaring and blaring and blaring, and I'm telling the guy, well, you know, I better get going. He looks around, he says, well, look at the traffic. He looked out there, and he said, ah, and you know the word he said.
Oh, God, I remember
then
that.
I started laughing. He says, well, I better let you go because they'll really be mad if they don't. But they're passionate, and they never forget. And that's you know, that's the big difference. Here they're very passionate here in Tampa. They love their hockey. We know that. It's a little smaller of a group of fans here than we have in Philadelphia, but they're as passionate, but I don't think they're as demonstrative as those guys, as those people in Philly.
Well, you know, the Flyers just signed Gordon Murphy today as an assistant coach.
Oh,
so
great.
He'll be back with the team.
Ah, Murph, I'm glad. You know, geez, that's what, their 15th assistant coach? They got more coaches than the football team.
Ben Paddock go, and he wasn't, you know, which is very unusual. And, you know, the Flyers with Ed Snyder, I mean, you know, that's a family. You know, and rarely do you ever see anybody that's let go. They'll find something for him, but he was not offered a job with the Flyers, which I thought was very interesting.
You know what's interesting, too, is that I think there's only one guy that's on that coaching staff or in, you know, that's pretty involved in is Joey Mullen out of New York, and all the rest had at one time played at least a year or two with Philly, every single guy.
Wow. It's a great organization.
You know, that's raising.
Well, you know, one of the criticisms
is Joe Cadillac
of the Flyers,
still, does he still have a job with the Flyers? Yeah, I know he's not that PR guy, right? But does he still have some kind of an honorary job with the Flyers?
Yeah, he does. He does. I mean, I get a lot of emails on the information, and thank God, because, you know, my so-called buddies in Clarkie and Coetzee and those guys happen to forget that I'm down here, and they, you know, they forget to tell me stuff. And so I come up there, I'm dumb as a rock, and then I say things, and they go, oh, no, he's not around anymore. I go, wow. But Joe is kind of he works the website, I think. I think he kind of is in charge of putting all the information on the Flyer website.
Okay, good. I'm glad to see he's
great.
And his wife both worked there.
After the first year, so Lou Nolan, still there as the PA announcer.
Yeah, exactly. He's still there. Lou, yeah, and he's getting shorter, heavier, and got white hair now.
Oh no! But Chief, the famous line down there, you know, if you think your puck's going to hit your seat, you have the manager would cheer for you in front of your money to sit in the lower seat. So, being a Flyer fan, one day, I said to my buddy, let's try it right there, right? So I said, section 35, I'm afraid a puck's going to hit me. So can we sit in a lower level? So we sat in a lower level, and my buddy got hit by a puck anyway.
That's funny.
Chief, I got to ask you this, because I'm a believer not only in Philadelphia, but all around the country now. I think that the old arenas, the Spectrum, you know, Chicago, Detroit, I mean, these new buildings are beautiful. They're great. They have all the amenities you'd ever want. But now it's a different people. I mean, it's a different feeling. You don't get you don't feel nearly as close, in my view, as you did, you know, in the 70s and 80s and so forth.
Yeah, I agree too. And you know what, too, Anton, is that it's a lot of manufactured excitement. You know, I mean, as soon as the whistle blows, oh my God, you got 15. Megatons of noise hitting you they're shooting T-shirts. And remember the time, Tommy, when we were over in the Thunderdome and they had a great promotion? One of the PR guys said, well, why don't we shoot those Subway sandwiches up in the crowd? And they hit a guy in the head, broke his glasses. He was really ticked off.
Well,
he was going to sue him and everything.
There's never a minute where never a minute where they're not blasting music. I'm not saying just the Lightning. Everywhere you go, basketball, baseball, they got to have, every second, you can't talk to anybody.
Well, look at what Dan Baker's going through with the Eagles after 29 years. We're going in a different direction.
Oh,
right.
Oh, yeah. I know, and it bothers me is that I think what bothers me about our sports now is the people that market it or the people that manage it and that think that the fan is stupid. I mean, why do you have to be told when to get excited, when to yell? We know when to get excited. We know when to yell.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, why
that's
do we have to be
point.
Told that? If you have to be told that, that's when your team is playing really crappy and
you
don't want to yell at them and other than swear at them.
That's right.
The Chief, my years in Cleveland watching the Barons, there was like 5,000 people out there, Richfield Coliseum, and people said noise, and people said, I'm not going to make any noise. I'm going to watch a hockey game out there.
Exactly.
Richfield is such a great city out there now. So, Chief, thank you so much for your time. We got to go tee it up maybe next week or this week here. Let me know what your schedule. We'll go tee it up, get Mr. Peckham out there too.
Sounds good, Tommy. Sounds good.
Chief, you could go anytime with Tommy because he doesn't let work interfere with his golf.
No. Well, you know what?
That.
Don, he's so fast he could play 18 holes in his hour-long lunch break.
It's like the trash guy backing up, Chief. Beep, 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 beep.
Bang. I know. He hits the ball while you're still talking. I says, you need a beeper, Tommy, like the trash can guy.
Oh, God. Chief, we'll have to get together next week, tee it up during the day. It'll be wonderful. Get Rick out there, too, Chief.
I will, Tommy. Good enough.
Have a great time.
Take care, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Chief. Always a pleasure having the Chief on. Now our baseball insider, Stevie K's on, and I'd like to welcome to the program. I like you sending these emails when you got this out. 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm just trying to get to sleep from the night before, Steve.
Yeah, I got to get up early for that job of mine.
I know. The most question of the day, how's Buddy?
Buddy's doing well. He's sleeping right now. And let's see if he can stay that way or else we'll see if you guys are going to get the serenade.
That was a question from Mr. Carney today at the Rays game. He wanted to see how Buddy was, and are you attending Friday night? Do you want to see? That's the other question you want me to ask you tonight.
Yeah, I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll have a good time. We'll have our little Sunday brunch, and hopefully we can bring a few victories the Rays way and at least some levity to the games because these are really difficult. You know, not being in attendance and not being in the press box puts me into the role of being a fan. And sitting at my desk and being a fan is very difficult on a day like today.
That was a great – Alex Cobb, great effort today. But, you know, when I just got back from the game, I had, you know, Frank took over the first 10 minutes of the show, and I was what was Evan Longoria thinking up there? It was one out. He stood there. Now, I still say it's up to the third base coach down there, Tom Foley, to wake up because he looks at him out second base up there, and that, you know, you should tell him what's going on.
Yeah, it's kind of Murphy's Law with the Rays right now. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong, you know, and that's every game we're asking ourselves the same thing. Why didn't this happen or how did that happen or, you know, and it's a shame because the talent is certainly on this roster.
Oh, it's just so disappointing being a Rays fan to watch this every night. You just say, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Here we go again. Oh, don't do this, you know. And many times I walk up from my seat, I just go so disgusted. I go down, talk to Tom and go down, see Patty, and I just get frustrated.
Yeah, it's a frustrating time to be a Rays fan.
But,
well,
you know,
the thing is, though, we were talking about
so
this a little bit earlier.
Cyclical.
It's a difficult time to be a baseball fan because, I mean, you know, the basics of the game are just, I mean, I don't care what team you watch. Well, maybe the exception would maybe be the Cardinals. But, I mean, every game. I mean, things that you wouldn't see in the Little League happen in the Major League.
Fundamental baseball is not there right now, guys. I mean, what do you do? Joe had, Joe got the guys together just do like a spring training thing and doggone and they almost won a game the other night. The Monday night's game was a good game. But, Steve, this Baltimore team – this hitting, this Baltimore team, Buck's doing a great job. Now they go up to New York for after the day off tomorrow for three games, important games for the O's.
Yeah, the Baltimore's in that. You know, they're two games over 500, so they're clumped in with about eight other teams in the American League that are, you know, two games under 500 to three or four games over 500, and it's a
right.
very important stretch for all these teams. You know, nothing's going to be settled in the wild card or in a lot of these divisions. You know, I think the best story in baseball right now has got to be the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God, 10 in a row, and they beat up on the Tigers. And it's just like the days of George Brett, Frank White, you know mm-hmm. all those great players they had back then. And then I give the Royals credit up there. James Shields is on a winning team right now. He's probably looking at, so is Matt Garza, what's wrong with the Rays right now? They're on winning teams. And, I can't fault the Rays. I mean, they gave us 90 victories all those years now. It just so happens they have a stumbling block right now. But mm-hmm. when teams do the stumbling block, guys, this makes this team stronger for next year and the years to come.
Well, fellas, we talked about attendance. How is the fact that they are now, after all the years they had great teams and struggled to get people, and I don't follow the attendance every day in the box score. I should, I guess, but I don't. How has it affected the attendance? Has it really hit it in the head?
No, I mean, to assume that losing is going to affect the Rays' attendance dramatically would have to assume that winning brought people to the ballpark. And those two things don't really happen. The Rays don't draw where they're at because of where the stadium's at. I mean, whether or not what we're going to see is what you have to really watch for is the television ratings. And that's going to be the thing that's either going to go up or going to go way down. Based on when the Rays are winning and when they're losing. When they're winning, the television ratings and the merchandise
right.
sales go way up. And when they're losing, now we'll have to see how the TV ratings bottom out. You know, it could end up working out well for the Rays in the negotiations for a TV deal because they come back next year after having a down year this year and they start causing some excitement again. Those ratings will shoot up a little bit higher and be inflated, and then the Rays will take that to the television contract and say, hey, look, this is our ratings, this is where we are, blah, blah, blah. But they also have a great – this flex pack have been extremely successful this year, and the impact of the flex pack has not been felt yet because a lot of – they assume they sold a lot of them to families. They don't get counted in the attendance, which say you buy a nine-pack, you know, three, six, or nine-pack, correct?
Right.
Uh-huh.
They don't get counted until you use them at a game. And a lot of people, they figure, bought them to use them later in the season.
Hey, Steve, could you hang on for 1 second?
Yeah.
We got a special guest on our hotline. We're just hang on. He talks of football with the Storm quarterback, Randy Hibbert. Randy, welcome to the program. We're talking to Steve K. Baseball, Don Henderson, their Philadelphia sports legend, and also Roger Hender, a Leonard legend, and Frank, you know, Frank Carroll, great producer, big Storm fan. Randy, finally, we got you on the program. Welcome aboard, sir.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Randy, the greatest game, is, I think, in 5 years of the Tampa Bay Storm, you lived on the field the last home game. I called you to Willis Reed, and you threw that touchdown pass to T.T. Tallrek. That was the greatest play I've seen in 5 years of the Tampa Bay Storm.
Hey, well, I was just happy we were able to close it out there. We put big pressure right there, giving them so much time left in the clock, giving them a chance to drive down the field on our defense. But our defense continues to come up big for us.
And what's the biggest challenge for a quarterback? I mean, I know the pace and everything. For you, coming from a conventional football background. To the Arena League with the speed, the number of players, et cetera. What did you find your biggest challenge?
Probably a lot of it is mechanics go out the window. You're throwing off your back foot a lot of times. You're throwing the spots. You have to react so much quicker. And you got to have so much more touch in this game than in an outdoor game, whereas you got more space on the field. You can try to fit the ball into tighter areas. Where here you have to drop the ball over so many people, and you got a wall to deal with. It makes things a little bit harder, and you can't really throw a ball out the back of the end zone because, it's happened a couple times to me. It goes off the back of the net.
Right.
Randy, biggest game of the year for our organization. Orlando's in town. We had Coach Sammons on early in the program. We owe this team so many games, and I can't wait for Saturday night. We're going to bury this franchise.
Right, yeah, it's a big game for us. You know, they stole one from us at home earlier in the year, and then we went up to their house and we just couldn't make the play to win the game up there. And so, I mean, it's a big one. This one's for a chance at first place in the division, you know, and that's the biggest thing, to get a home playoff game, because home field advantage, especially in the playoffs, is huge.
Randy, to tell everybody you had a nice honor by the AFL, and congratulations again about that. Tell the guys what the AFL did for you.
Yeah, this week I was privileged enough to win highlight of the week on that the overtime victory out there in Iowa with the 11-yard run I had right there in overtime. Fortunate enough that the line did a good job sealing blocks and crashing down their defensive line. And I mean, it really opened up like the Red Sea, you know. It was just nobody in the middle, and I just kind of saw it and took off and was untouched. So it's really right there on that O-line right there to give me that hole. And, I mean, it just happened that I was able to walk in.
Your initials aren't J.C.
yeah, no, right?
Tommy, I told Randy when we had him off air that when we start our fantasy football league this year, he's my quarterback.
Oh, okay. Well, he's got to come into football. Randy's going to come into football picks this year. I think Coach Sam was doing the same thing. We do a round for the samples around each week. Steve K, you're included in that too. We do the football picks, and yours truly won one week out of 4 years.
yeah, no, like I told him, I just hope I don't let him down.
Wait, no, you won't. You're doing great. What about our offensive line? I think it's been playing great the last several weeks for the Tampa Bay Storm.
I think they've played great all year. I mean, they've come up big, and they're the reason our offense is playing so well right now. I mean, up front, it starts up there, it starts and ends up there. If they give us time to throw the ball and give our receivers time to get open downfield, we're tough to deal with. And, I mean, they're playing great. I mean, I've had opportunity to stand in the pocket almost all year, and, I mean, the occasional guy will get through, but, I mean, they're on scholarship too, you know, so they're going to win a couple times out there on the D-line. But for the most part, I think our O-line has played tremendous this year.
Best year with Storm has all that talent wide receivers. Oh, that's just spectacular to watch you throw the ball to T.T. Tolliver and also like Amari Jackson and Michael Lindsay. It's just a treat to watch you throw the ball to those guys.
I appreciate it, and I'm loving it. It's a great thing to have so many veteran receivers out there. I mean, I'm still learning this game, and they're teaching me a lot out there, and it's just nice to be able to fall back on them and pick their brains about defenses and what they see and what they like. And I mean, it's just it makes my job that much easier to have that much experience out there.
Hey, Randy, you know, from a football perspective with your teammates. I don't know whether you talk, and that's what the question is, about all these shenanigans of Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football. You know, national exposure, a big pile of cash in his hand. And do you guys talk about that at all and, you know, personal opinion about a guy like that?
Not really. I mean, I guess it has to do with because we're in a totally different league. I don't really have too many discussions. I mean, what somebody does with their personal life and what they got going on is their business. I kind of, I mean, I like to keep my business, and I mean, they got a whole nother life. I don't know what's going on with him and his lifestyle or what he's got going on behind closed doors and things like that. So, I mean, everybody makes decisions and they live how they feel like they need to live. So, I mean, I can't judge anybody.
Making a lot more money than you, right?
Absolutely. And when your wallet's that big, I mean, you never know what decisions you make.
Oh,
you know.
No. DK, you have any football questions for Randy Hippert, our Storm quarterback?
No, no questions for me.
Okay.
Still have get out to the Storm game. Tommy Boy keeps telling me how absolutely exciting it is, and I've yet to go out to a game. I'm looking forward to it, though.
Well, you got to come out one of these games. Come out for the last July 26th. Let me know. I'll hook you up for tickets and get you upstairs. You meet Ben up there in that. Randy, I think this can be the biggest game in the year. Packed crowd. I was telling Coach Samuels, I can't wait for it. I got to wait two more. I'm so tense up right now. I wish it was tomorrow night, believe me.
Yeah, no, we still got. I'm glad it's Saturday. We still got some preparation to do, but it's definitely a big game for us, and hopefully we have a packed house and that ninth man can show up and cause havoc for these guys out there.
I still say it's a 3-iron for the 25 yard line to get hit up at section 309.
Hey Randy, how's your knee? I mean, you took a pretty bad bruising there in the Philly game.
Yeah, no, I'm actually doing well. It was my IT band. The docs were telling me, it said it just locked my lower leg up for a little bit, and I just, the last 2 weeks, I've been massaging it and icing it and putting game ready on it and things like that. And so, I mean, it actually feels good, and last week was actually the first, like, I didn't wear my knee brace last week, so I was actually feeling kind of healthy, and I guess it showed a little bit running around out there for a few plays, a few yards for us.
Great. And talking to your head coach, it had to be a little tough when you were on the sideline with that injury, looking at things and seeing what was happening and how badly you wanted to get in and play.
Yeah, no, especially when I went out and missed the first Philly trip. I mean, it was hard because I was sitting on the couch watching things on TV, and you just knowing you have no impact on the game. You feel helpless out there, and your buddy's out there on the field battling, and you're sitting on the couch eating Doritos watching the game or something, you know? So it's just one of those things where I was itching to get back out on the field, and when I got hurt the Philly game, I missed a couple plays, but there was no way I was missing any more than that. And, I mean, it's just one of those things. I was fortunate enough to come in and play well afterwards, because if not, we'd been talking about something else.
I know that every time we talked to Coach, he would say, well, we think he's going to play this week. We think he's going to play this week. But he was a little bit noncommittal on the show as to, you know, whether you're going to be healthy enough to play that first one coming back from the injury.
Yeah, it was I didn't get cleared to play, actually, until that Thursday. They wouldn't let me practice in the beginning of the week, and then I've convinced them to test me out on, like, Tuesday or Wednesday to put me through drills, and I said, if I can do it, let me play. If I can't, then sit me. I said, it's up to you, but at least test me, and they said, fine, and I passed the test and was able to go out there and have a pretty good game.
Yes, yes, you did. Randy, the highlight of practice today, I saw Coach Hillivan trying to throw touchdown passes. It looked like a Mauer duck flying.
not everybody can throw a tight spiral. It's tougher than it looks.
Like a Mauer duck. I said to Ben, oh, my God, there goes a Mauer duck in the air.
As opposed to a dead Mauer duck that we've all seen from time to time.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes, though, if that duck hits in the right spot, it doesn't matter how it looks as long as it gets there.
That's true. You're right about that.
I can tell that to Coach Hillivan when I see a Mauer duck. Well,
it's been a terrific season for the Storm. We had some really great games. Then you got hurt and seemed to – then Chris Smith left. There seemed to be a lull. And now, ever since you guys are back, it's just been a tremendous, from a viewer's point of view or a fan's point of view, it's been a tremendous game and a tremendous season. And I really want to thank you for everything you've done. I know that when you come out on Saturday night, there's probably going to be a standing ovation after your last game, especially when you hobbled out on that floor. Mm-hmm. Took command of the team and scored in a very short time.
Oh, it was. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, man. Every time we take that field, we want to put a good product out there, not just for us and all the hard work we put in week to week, day to day, but for everybody that comes out there and watches us and supports us. I mean, without those people in the seats, man, we wouldn't even be out there on the floor playing. So. it's just nice to have all that support and to be able to go out there and put a good show on for everybody.
Well, Randy, everybody in the show supports you 1,000,000%. I'm with sitting up with Frank, and we support you 1,000,000%. Best of luck to you coming this Saturday night. We'll have to get you on every week after 8 o'clock, Bewitching Hour. You can come on and talk about the game. Be great.
Oh, awesome. Just let me know, and we'll definitely get it done.
Definitely.
Great.
Randy, have a great
and it's a big game. Thanks
have
a
great
lot.
Game. Go get them.
Ready.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much for having me again.
Saturday night.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Randy. Well, that's Storm quarterback Randy Hibbert. Now back to Steve K. Talk some baseball with us right now. Now, hey, Steve K., I got to tell you something funny, right? I was talking to Steve Carney about this, right? There were two birds flying around Tropicana Field. Don, Roger, Frank, you know the birds flying on Tropicana Field. This one bird sat on the Orioles dugout, right? And that was last night's game. The ball almost came back and almost hit the bird, and the bird almost took a crap in Dick Vitale's head.
Dickie V was there, huh, Tommy, and his season tickets, right?
Yes, and the birds were flying around, and I said to Ed Edwards, says, "Oh my God, this is the I think Peter should hate the Rays. You got two birds flying around, lost, and they hit a catwalk." So Peter might be.
let me tell you something, Tommy. You got to give Dick Vitale a lot of credit. He's there, win or lose. He doesn't just come when they're
definitely.
Winning.
Definitely. I mean,
that's
he's a
right.
great baseball fan. He's a great person for our community, and with things he has done, it's just been spectacular. I respect the man 1,000,000% what he's done for the whole area down here. It's been spectacular.
I can tell you,
Steve, getting back to baseball, Tommy,
that
sorry,
he's done so much for this community that nobody
mm-hmm.
will ever know. He has gone out things. He's paid for funerals for kids. He's paid for football uniforms for a team that couldn't afford to pay for them. He's paid for a lot of things for a lot of kids to go up to the All Children's Hospital. He's done so much. Really a pleasure to know him and to know. I ran his son-in-law's campaign, Judge Tom Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Dick is just a tremendous, tremendous person. And so is his wife. His wife is a beautiful lady.
Oh,
and so
my
are
God.
The kids. The kids are great, too, Frank.
They're very – the kids are all – each one of those kids has done very well for themselves. They're very focused as the way he is, and it's really a pleasure to be around there, and especially now the boys are getting ready to go to the upper school at ODA.
Wow.
They just, it's really, and even Tommy. Tommy was the, the quarterback for Notre Dame.
Right.
And he played in the championship game in 98. He now leaves the courthouse early to go coach football at ODA on a daily basis.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Give a little bit back, Frank. Giving a little bit back.
That's
a lot.
Right. Amen.
That's fantastic. When you think about, everything's about the kids right now, guys. Anything to do with kids, I do with kids 100%. Like Matt Gary's got his roller tournament September 17th through the 21st, and I wish you guys come down to the press conference. It's at All Sports Arena. You know where that is, Roger. It's up by 9 Neck of the Woods. July 16th, 11 a.m., but he's doing that not for himself, but the kids who can't afford, they want to play hockey, who can't afford the equipment. And that's who he's doing it for.
Great
endeavor.
So many kids were, want to play hockey, don't have a hockey stick, and that's what he's doing that for. Not the publicity, having the thing there, but he's wanting to do it. He's revamping the whole building just for the kids out there, and somewhere the kids to go up there and that. So he's giving back to everything else that way and that. So I just wish that everybody who owned a business like that would get back to the kids and community. That's what he's doing.
Hey,
that's
Steve,
right.
You haven't talked about having to buy a new couch lately. How things go?
No.
Oh God.
No. He's we've been going to training. Like I said, it's been working. He turned 2 years old this week.
Whoa.
He turned 2 years old on Father's Day. So I called and asked my dad why he hasn't called and asked, you know, wished my dog a happy birthday. You know?
He's really a quick learner, isn't he?
it only took him 2 years, but he's doing much better. No, I haven't had to buy a new couch.
You know, Steve, we started talking about the best teams, and the Royals are just a terrific story right now. Mm-hmm. Would you say the Giants are the best team in baseball?
To be determined. I expect the Los Angeles Dodgers to take that division and catch the Giants. The Giants did have a series of fortunate events earlier this year where they were – just think of how the Rays have been playing for the last 25 or 30 games.
Mm.
Flip that around, and that's the San Francisco Giants. I don't mean to belittle the Giants. I believe they're an excellent team that has a lot of capabilities, but I think their record it's evening out a little bit now over the last week to 10 days. I think they played out of their mind for a few weeks, sort of like the Milwaukee Brewers did earlier this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, the other thing is that the Dodgers, Don Mattingly has taken so much pressure. I mean, the payroll and, how they've played. And, it's amazing what's happened with, Mattingly. It was sort of a question mark when they were going to sign him at the end of the season last year going into this year. For some reason, the Dodgers just haven't come together yet.
Yeah, they're
starting. And he has to deal with Puig.
With what?
They're starting
yes, with Yasiel Puig.
Puig is a reason they're coming together. I mean, he is probably the best player on that team. Now, if you look at the seasons that Andre Ethier, Matt Kemp, and Carl Crawford are having, you wonder, you say, wow, that's right there. That's like $50 million of their payroll, and those three outfielders are having what we would call subpar seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, the Dodgers are starting to put it together and are starting to get on a roll. And as I've been saying to a few people, I do believe David Price ends up as a Dodger by the end of this year. Now, the only question is, what do you do with Danny Heron or Josh Beckett? You got to find a third team to unload one of them. But,
wow.
Getting David Price in that rotation is something that they already have a $215 million payroll. So adding David Price for the rest of this year is not that big of a concern for this year. And they have a lot of money coming off the books next year, a lot of money.
Mm. David Price in L.A., he'll be reunited with Carl Crawford again in that.
If you really want to have some fun, I believe next year he'll be reunited with James Shields as well.
Ooh, wow. Oh, my God, that's fantastic up there in that.
Well, I definitely think Shields is going to go. I don't think there's any question that he's going to be traded, but – when you talk about thing about him is that, he caused a little of controversy himself. I mean, he and Mattingly just didn't get along for quite a period of time because he had his own way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he's a young player. We talked to the chief a few minutes ago, talking about the Lightning and the fact that they're so young and what it's going to take to win. Well, Puig, the same thing. I mean, here's a guy. An infield fly, and he doesn't know an infield fly rule, and gets thrown out of second base. I mean,
Dodgers are still 6 or 7 games right now over .500. They've cut into that Giants lead from 11 games down, I think, 6.
Puig
is without Puig, no matter how you want to slice it. Without Puig, that Dodger team is in a lot of trouble. He is the best player in the game outside of Mike Trout. He can, yes, he overthrows bases, and he's not the best base runner, but he brings a lot of energy. You got to remember, a lot of people, this Dodgers team last year went on a 42-8 run.
Right.
I mean, that is just think about a 42-8 run, and he was in the thick of it a lot for a lot of it, So I expect the Dodgers to really make some headway in that division, and I do expect them to pick up David Price. They have the prospects to get it done. And, that's just the best thing for the Rays is the fact that the Giants did get out to a good start.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100% on the fact that, you know, he was the catalyst that really turned things around last year and really has played very well this year so far. Another thing about him that we're going to have to be watching, though, as it goes along, he's fearless. I mean, he's out there making diving catches, hitting the wall. I mean, he's the kind of player that he's a big, strong guy, but, man, oh, man, does he take chances. I mean, you can't afford to get him break an arm or something.
No. I mean, you look at him and Bryce Harper, the way they play the game, and to an extent, Mike Trout. You know, but then we get into that, you know, how do you shepherd in that kind of intensity for a player? I mean, it didn't work for Darren Erstad, and he ran himself into the ground. It didn't work for Grady Sizemore, and he ran himself into the ground. Now, some guys can play that way and last a long time, like Pete Rose did, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Pete Rose had run through a wall if he had to. It didn't matter to him, and he stayed healthy the majority of his career. But how do we shepherd and how do we control a Puig or a Bryce Harper and tell them, hey, if you go head-to-head against the fence, you're going to lose?
Well, help me last night with David De Jesus, Donnie. Have you seen the game with Frank? I know, Steve, you've seen it. David De Jesus, that ball is going to that foul pole. It's like a golf shot. When it hits off that pole, it goes right or left up there. And David went full for for the foul pole, went right at it. And I'm like, oh, no. And I see the reaction in the short on the replay that he remember that he hit face first up there in that. But he made a great effort in that. And it is when you said, you know, people gave a standing ovation, like, oh, my God, hope he's not hurt. And here we go. Here we go with the Rays. Here we go again. Another guy gets hurt up there in that. But another question.
I don't know how many people on this call saw Chris Davis's grand slam last night. But that was not a bad pitch by Eric Bedard. And the fact that Chris Davis flicked his wrists at it, and drove it to the opposite field off the foul pole, you know, with his butt heading towards first base and his arms just basically pushing. I mean, that's some serious strength that I haven't seen in a guy. That was just strong.
Well, how about today, Nelson Cruz? It's a blast off of Cesar Ramos today. Bang, that thing was crushed up there and that. But it's just the bullpen. And another team's having a tough run. Arizona Diamondbacks, guys. Remember they played those two games, I think, in Australia? I don't think they lost two games to the Dodgers up there. Then they're 0-2. This team is struggling to get backed up to .500. They got a lot of good talent on there for
Tommy,
for
how about
Gibson
Colorado? Over. Colorado has been absolute. Unbelievable!
Oh, they're on.
And the Mets. Oh my God! You talk about it. I'm telling you, they don't have three major league players on that team. I mean, I can't believe they could field a team like that day in and day out. Well, the best player on the team is Bobby Abreu, and Bobby Abreu has been finished for 3 years.
David Wright and Lucas Duda and Bartolo Colon and Wheeler are not bad. They got Syndergaard that didn't work out, a young kid. I mean, they got a lot of talent.
Yeah, but whoa, don't tell me about Suter. Have you watched him at all? Do you watch their games?
Syndergaard.
Oh.
Noah Syndergaard, young prospect.
Yeah.
That team's got Matt Harvey coming up. They got, you know, today was interesting. Terry Collins, who I'm not a big fan of, I think I've mentioned a few of you guys here. I'm very much into following managers.
Right.
I've never been a fan of Terry Collins. I believe he's in the same mold as Manny Acta and Larry Boa. This guy would be a great bench coach because he knows baseball and he can communicate with people, but he's not a baseball guy. He did what I don't even know how the game ended, and I don't care because
Three-two, the Mets broke their eight-game losing streak.
Ooh.
Okay. Thank you. Now here's my confusion. Bartolo Colon, 8 innings, 88 pitches. And you take him out for the ninth inning. Why?
Great question.
Well, he explained on the post-game show why he did it.
What was his reasoning?
He said that he thought he had done everything. That it was a 90-degree day. He thought he had done a workmanlike job, and he wanted to make the change. And then he made the second change because of the fact that I forget who the batter was that came up that was against left-handed pitching, he was hitting 126.
Well, I understand changes he might make in the ninth inning. The point is, Bartolo Colon, yes, he's old. He's a veteran. And he's thrown 88 pitches. And there's one guy that knows how to take care of himself between innings. It didn't seem like he was under a lot of stress or duress. And he wasn't out there at any long stint of time for any one
right.
inning.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
And it's little things like that that really, you know, and then, you know, turning their bullpen over to Jose Veras to begin the year when, you know, even an average scout can tell. I mean, I watched him in winter ball. I kept track of him in winter ball. And he was striking guys out. But that's a far cry from the major leagues. And then you cycle through Kyle Farnsworth in the bullpen.
Oh.
You don't have to spend if you're the New York Mets and you want to rebuild. I get that, but you need to get young arms in that bullpen,
right?
You know. And by the way, the Phillies, I did see they brought up that hard thrown kid. How's he doing?
He's doing great. That's who I want to talk about, Ken Giles. And of course,
mm-hmm.
the critics are saying, why didn't you bring him up earlier? Has
mm-hmm.
not allowed a run. Pitched two today, one hit, and the eighth and ninth inning, and strikeout, and I think he hit 101, Steve, one pitch, I think the second game, but he's been 100 almost every game, and he's got a great
mm-hmm.
slider.
Yeah, I've heard ever since you guys brought him up, I kept an eye on him, and I saw that he got promoted from AA to AAA, but he didn't stay in AAA very long. And he got called up, and I wasn't sure if it was going to be for a permanent call-up or just one of those, hey, we'll take a look at you for three or four games.
Mm.
I also see that Papelbon, the scouts are saying, although he's not throwing 94 and 95 anymore, he's pitching well enough and getting guys out that he may be available or he may be tradable this year. You know,
right.
to be a setup guy in Detroit. Or, you know, even going back to Boston, you know, because if he's a setup guy, that little $15 million option of his that's based on games finished won't kick in.
Right,
right.
Interesting.
Well,
Detroit
needs anybody. Anybody from the Tigers coming out of the bullpen's got to be what they've had.
Yeah, Tigers team. Is that if the Royals are the biggest feel-good story, that Tigers team has to be the biggest mystery ever since they were – what, like 20, you know, like 17-5 or something. They had a 10.5
right.
game beat up the Indians, and now they're you know, they're in second place, and there's something wrong with Justin Verlander, who, you know, been giving up 5 runs a start. So,
Kate Upton, that's
well,
why.
I'll tell you, Papelbon the other night was the first blown save, but I'm not really criticizing him too much for that because it was that 1-0 game. You know, in the bottom of the ninth inning, and he did allow the run. The Phillies went on, and they won 6-1 in 13. But they were not hitting. And, I mean, the only run on the board for the Phillies was Ryan Howard, I think, in the first inning. But, you know, I mean, I understand that. I mean, if you have a 1-0 game, there's going to be some time you're going to give up a run, you know, to tie the game. But at least they didn't lose. But he has really come around, and he's hitting 92, 93, 91 to 93, I'll say, consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got good position on his pitches. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's the whole key, and that's what he says now, that he's learned in many ways, and we've seen this with pitchers from way back in the 50s, they have learned to become a pitcher, quote-unquote. You know, getting back to a point you just made, which I thought was terrific, about Colon. I was listening to the Braves broadcast today, which normally, you know, I'm not in the car all the time listening to it. But Don Sutton, you know, does the radio. I don't know who the other guy was. But he had a great point today. It annoys him to no end when he hears a manager or a coach say, I hope to get 6 innings out of him. And, you know, why not 9 innings? The game is 9 innings long. That's what.
Thank you.
You know, he
Thank
used
you
to
for
do
saying
when
that.
He was pitching.
Wait a minute, Roger.
That.
They took Tanaka out last night after 6 innings. They said, you know, now he did throw close to 100 pitches, but at the same time, they're talking about a quality start, and that's all you have to do. All you have to do is go 6 innings, and then you go bing, bing, bing with relief pitchers like the. Yankees do every game, and hopefully you win.
Well, that's true, Don, but what Sutton's point was well taken, you know, because he comes from another era of pitching, and you were expected to get nine innings. You know, we never used to count pitches when Robin Roberts, Kurt Simmons, Don Newcomb, those guys were pitching. I'd love to go back and count how many pitches Robbie threw when he was
pitching. Well, you know, Don Sutton never missed a start.
Never missed one. There you go.
Never
you know that Don Sutton came out, he was drafted out of high school. And I believe he immediately reported to the minor leagues, and then he finished the season there, and then he went to play winter ball. And I want to say, I could probably look it up, and maybe I'll look it up when Tommy Boy is with me at this weekend. I want to say his first that was his first year in pro ball, and he thinks he threw somewhere around 200, 250 innings.
Oh,
I think
first
his next year,
year
in the minors, he threw 300 innings.
Woo!
I think
in the minors.
Well, Steve.
Well, Carl used to throw 300 innings.
Right.
What's that?
Steve Carlton, he threw 300 innings.
Well, sure, but they got 34 starts.
So
they would get 36 to 38 starts back then. In the minor leagues, on a shortened season, they were getting 36, 38 starts. Now, they asked Alex Cobb this year to move forward to this, something that Don Sutton would like to hear. They said, you know, would you like to throw 200 innings, you know, whatever. He goes, well, how many starts am I going to get? 33. And he says, well, I'd like to throw 297 innings. You know, he just did 33 times 9. You know? And he said, you know, and I'm sure everybody knows Alex Cobb has that mentality. You know?
Yes.
If you were to say to Alex Cobb, listen, can you just give us 6 innings today? He might punch you in the nose.
Yeah.
That's right. Alex comes from the old school, guys, and he comes from the old school. He wants to get that ball every fourth day and get 9 innings today. Alex pitched a gem of a game today, but unfortunately, the Rays had no offense today, unfortunately, up there in that. So hopefully they can take 3 out of 4 to Houston team. That, Steve, what about this Houston team? They're much improved over last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they're we're starting to see, you know, a lot of people don't agree with the way they went about their rebuild. They've lost an average of 108 games per year the last 3 years. Let that sink in for a minute. You know, and over 300 losses in 3 years. But in the meantime, they were collecting minor league prospects. You know, just collecting high draft picks. You know, top 10 picks, top 5 picks even. On top of that, they did a great job in the Hunter Pence deal. You know, getting John Singleton. And now they're finding pitchers like the Colin McHugh that the Rockies had DFA'd. They're finding a few guys like that. Now, again, I think the Astros are playing a little bit over their head the last two and a half weeks or so. And people are getting this false, wow, you know, Jonathan Singleton and George Springer, wow, they've arrived. I still think they're going to lose close to probably 90 games. That would be my...
Wow.
My
if you were in a position to select a general manager, no matter what team, who would you pick? Who would you say right now is the most consistent, most well advised, most talented general manager?
Wow, that's difficult. You know, the Cardinals have done such a great job putting a full system into place. That it'd be difficult to go against the Cardinals, but that's a full system. That's a really tough question because
great question.
You know, just like in the old days when managers got too much credit for wins and losses, as information about how a front office is run these days, general managers get way too much credit for the positives and negatives of a franchise. You know, it's so
I think that about Sandy Alderman. I mean, I don't know whether it's the money with the Mets. I don't know if it's, you know, the family, the troubles they've gotten into. I don't know what it is, but you look at what they've done over the last 8 or 9 years, and I mean, it's just incredible. It's incredible that they make more bad deals and they have nothing. They have no talent.
Well, they have a lot of talent. The Mets don't kid yourself. The Mets have enough talent right now that a lot of people believe next year will be the year that they springboard right into contention with a little bit of additions. I mean, you're going to get Matt Harvey back. You've got Wheeler. You've got the kid from the Blue Jays. I mean, the team, in the minor league, the New York Mets are stacked with pitchers.
Wow.
They got to come in. They got to come in from all directions. It's very similar to put where the Mets are right now. Roll the clock back 2 years on the Miami Marlins, you know, and the arms that they had, including Jose Fernandez, you know.
Right.
Now you look at the play to Jose Fernandez and Matt Harvey, and it's insane. But you still got Harvey and Wheeler. Colon will be anchoring that rotation. You got John Neese and Dylan Gee. And then you got – there's several other arms down in the minors. You got the Syndergaard, whatever his name is, the catcher who came over in the Blue Jays deal. You still got David Wright. You got Curtis Granderson. And you have to add a few more pieces. But
right.
Alderson has done his best to rebuild that farm. And at the same time, they haven't gone out there and wasted a lot of money on the long-term Johan Santana, K-Rod. I mean, come on, we can probably go on and on. The Cubs and the Mets probably have the two worst, you know, if ever you want to say, hey, don't sign guys long-term, look at the Yankees, Cubs, and Mets.
Oh,
and
Philly's the same thing, too. We saw that the other
right.
week. But I still think if I had a general manager, Steve could probably agree with me this. I wish I had John Hart.
Yeah, John Hart is somebody who's – and what made him so good is he's a great talent evaluator. But, again,
exactly.
At the end, let's not forget, at the end of John Hart's tenure with the Cleveland Indians, he left that organization in shambles, and it wasn't
that's
his
right.
fault. The Jacobs brothers had directed him, you know, go out there and bring us that, you know, the window to win is now. I mean, you look at this guy got rid of Richie Sexson. He got rid of Jeremy Burnett. He got rid of Brian Giles. He got rid of Sean Casey. You start going down, you go down the line, you know, Julian Tavares and Alan Embry. Basically, if you were a young stud coming up in the Cleveland Indians system, you were basically shipped off Russell Branyon.
Right.
You know, for secondary pieces such as Bob Wickman or Ricardo Rincon, Brian Giles for Ricardo Rincon, you know.
That was bad.
You know, Jeremy Burnett for Kevin Seitzer. You know, Seitzer played 50 games and retired. Ricardo Rincon was moved to the A's. So this is what I mean. A general manager follows a plan, and at some point he's not in total control over what he does anymore. Fast forward to today, and that gap has shrunk a lot. Now it's more of a manager, front office, scouting department, with the ownership
right.
keeping their beak out of it and allowing the salaries to be set and the contract terms not to be negotiated by agents and owners like Prince Fielder with the Tigers, you know.
Mm.
Where they,
well,
the guy,
well, look what Boris just did. I mean, Boris gets him a contract. He goes back to the Red Sox. He's hurt anyway. He pulled a hamstring or something. But he got basically the same amount of money prorated from when he signed that he could have gotten before spring training started.
Yes, Scott Boras sold the farm, and I wrote the article about this where 2 years ago Boras came out. I think I mentioned this to you guys in a conference call. He came out and basically gave the strategy away. You know, teams and owners get panicked right around the beginning of spring training. And then the leverage switches back to the agent, you know. Well, owners and GMs have told owners, don't go behind our back and negotiate with Scott Boras or any agent or else we're out of here. You know, Boras did it with Prince Fielder. He did it with Rafael Soriano in New York. He did it with Rafael Soriano in Washington, where he went around the general manager and got the owner to okay the signing. You know,
he tried to do it with A-Rod.
And he tried to do it with A-Rod. So, he actually did it with A-Rod when he opted out.
Well, he did, yeah. He actually won that one.
Right.
Right.
So I can guarantee you guys that he's, and I mentioned this in the story, the first thing that every general manager that has any kind of stones, any kind of pride, went to their owner and said, if I'm running the team, I decide how long of a contract, I decide how much money, you're not involved in that process, you
right.
know, and the Steve.
Unless
Drew,
I come to you and ask you.
Well,
right.
the only time you should go is when you need to, you know, if the owner says, you have X amount of money on a rolling scale, you know, $300-400 million in the next 4 years, and you want to go ahead of that, then you should be able to ask the owner for permission to sign a guy.
Right,
but
right.
But what you don't want to have happen is that you're at home having a steak. You know, if you're Dave Dombrowski and you're at home having a steak and enjoying a nice glass of wine, you get a phone call from some AP reporter saying, you just signed Prince Fielder. How do you feel? You know, you don't want that phone call, and apparently that's what happened in Detroit. So, you know, but the J.D. Drew or the Stephen Drew and the Kendry Morales, Boris, he really sold them a bill of goods that they would really, you know, they would really get that. You know, teams would be desperate in spring training. Teams would be desperate. And as soon as the draft ended, teams would be desperate, you know, because it wouldn't cost you the draft pick. And
right.
He was determined to make it about the draft pick. And obviously, after the draft, they still didn't get the long-term offers they were looking for.
Yeah, they wanted
two,
well,
two quick two questions. One, a comment. I think Ned Colletti of the Dodgers doesn't get the credit and the notoriety that maybe a lot of other general managers get, and I think he does a great job. The other question is, wasn't Jonathan Singleton in the Roy Oswalt deal with the Phillies? And, you know, of course, Roy's out of baseball and Singleton's a rising star.
No, Singleton was part of the Hunter Pence deal, the four.
Oh, that's
the
right.
Four.
You're right. The,
okay.
The Hunter Pence deal. You're right.
Right.
I knew it was one of those deals. That's right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They got Singleton and a couple. They got three other guys. Three of that four are on the roster right now.
Mm.
Three of the four. Isn't that
yeah,
so?
One of them
well, that,
is a reliever that goes up and down
named
Keel.
Yeah, well, that's why the farm system of the Phillies has been so depleted. All those deals that were made.
Boy,
yeah,
the Phillies
are going back to Cliff Lee.
Mm.
Roy Halladay,
Roy Halladay,
Hunter Pence.
Mm.
You know, and it's a, you know, it's a fine line to walk. Do you want to build a farm system? You know, how do you build? You know, how do you go about building a farm system and having a team that compete? How confident are you that you could do both?
That's a great point. I was, you know, why I said John Hurt, what he did in the 90s before he, you know, gave all that talent away for the Indians, but he was a general manager that built Jacobs Field, basically built the Indians to the team they were in the 90s up there and that. So he, I remember interviewing John Hurt, Steve, and everyone. His first game as manager in that, you know, when the Doc Edwards got,
Yeah,
and then the guy Cannon, John Hurt says, he says, Tommy, I'm not a manager, I'm general manager material. And Hank Peters heard that, and look what Hank Peters did. He learned everything from Hank Peters.
Yeah, Hank found him in Baltimore. Hank hired him in Baltimore.
That's right, Baltimore.
And, but what's funny
yeah.
is Hank Peters came down to Florida as a scout to check out a high school prospect.
That's right.
And his manager and also the PE coach
I came
John
across
Hart.
This because you guys will, you know, will love this. I came across a Philadelphia Ramblers program I have from Friday, November 6, 1959, against the Clinton Comets. And, of course, in that era, nobody ever thought that Philadelphia could handle an ice hockey team. We were all living there and everything. And just this will really get you. The program editor for the Ramblers, Harvey Pollack.
Oh my God!
The price of tickets: $1, $1.50, $2, and $2.50. And
wow.
Also, one of the writers from the Daily News, Ben Calloway.
Oh my God!
It goes back.
I'll tell you, you go back to your comment about Nick Coletti. You know, it's hard to judge because they've spent so much money now.
That's true.
You know, I mean, they've got talented players, and maybe you know, maybe you're right. Maybe they're going to make a big run and win the NL West and overcome the Giants. Hopefully, they will because man, oh man, with that payroll of $225 million,
woo!
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and I expect them. Like I said, I expect them to go out and get David Price.
Oof.
They have to mention Ned Colletti, yes, he's done a nice job also building that farm system up.
Yes.
They got a kid. Now, we all know about Fernando Valenzuela, you know,
right.
From Mexico. They went down to Mexico, and they found a 15-year-old named Urias. I think his name is Juan Urias. He is a kind of a phenom. He's already in high A ball at age 17.
Oh, my.
You know? He's not overpowering. Imagine that. But he throws a curveball they say is major league ready. You know, his curveball these kids have no chance at.
Oh, my God.
This kid apparently is 17 years old. Now, we know Kyle Seager over with the Seattle Mariners. His brother, Corey, is in high A ball and is one of the top prospects in baseball. And they got an outfielder that they don't know what to do with named Jock Peterson. Now, if it wasn't for the fact that they have $21 million tied up in Carl Crawford, $20 million tied up in Matt Kemp, about $15 million or $16 million tied up in Andre Ethier, and having to find a place for Puig to play, this Peterson kid would be up.
Wow.
Well, they pretty much, don't you think that they pretty much feel that Kemp's going to go before he's going to be the one they're going to move out?
Well, the problem is Kemp's owed a lot of money, and Kemp is a very ordinary outfielder right now. Very ordinary. I mean, he's right around league average. You know?
Right.
Now, people could say, well, you know, he hasn't played a lot. He's been injured. It's going to come back to him, and he's going to be a superstar again.
Wow.
How much would you give up, and how much money would you take on to get that above league average outfielder?
Yes.
If his skill set deteriorates over the next couple of years, you're stuck with a $18 million a year or $20 million a year outfielder.
Wow. Mm. Hey, guys, Frank said tick, 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 tocks. You know what that means. Steve, I'll send you those stuff. We'll have to get off to doing the show. Mm-hmm. Respect to the next within the hour, those cuts. Thanks for coming
Beautiful.
On tonight.
Steve, take care. Always a pleasure. Always
we'll get you on
stuff.
Next week, Steve. Talk some more baseball.
Steve, terrific, terrific job, Steve. Always a pleasure
Absolutely.
To have you on. We learn a little bit every time you're on with us.
Hey, thanks, guys. And remember, if there's anything you ever need to know or you want me to track, just let me know.
Oh, God bless you, Steve. I'll see you.
You got
see
it.
You Friday
Frank,
night.
Another great job, Frank, on a tough day for you. And
yes.
Thanks to everybody else, and keep it going.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Don, for coming on.
We're always
praying
for you, buddy.
Yes,
you,
we
sir.
Are. Definitely my prayers all the
time. Like take care. Great job as usual. Tommy, take care. Get glad you made it home safe.
Yes,
God
thank
bless.
You, Roger. Thank you, Don, for coming on. Thank your Philadelphia legend, Don Henderson, for coming on. Roger Henner. Orlando Legend come on. Stevie K, our baseball insider, our quarterback for the Tampa Bay Storm, our weekly, he'll be coming on weekly, Randy Hibbert, head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm, Lawrence Samuels, and I can't forget a good friend of ours, good friend of mine, Bobby the Chief Taylor, for coming on. We got to go tee it up, frankly, go tee it up, play golf with the Chief up there. Sorry,
always
fans, for coming on. Yes?
We're always down here, Tommy.
Oh, I know. We got to get the Thank you for getting the Chief down. Thank always our sponsor, Brad White Water Heaters. When you purchase a water heater, log on to bradforwhite.com. Attention, your Tampa Bay people in the Tampa Bay area, come out, see the Tampa Bay Storm play the Orlando Predators. Get your tickets now. We're expecting a sold out building, a ruckus building, something to do for entertainment. Now, if you want to baseball, go see the Tampa Bay Rays 7:10 on tomorrow night, Houston, 7:10 Friday night, 4:10 Saturday. The OJs come to town. And 1:40 on Sunday. For tickets, 1-800-FAN-RAYS. Frank, I know it's been a tough day for me, tough day for you, Frank. God bless him. And he's looking down and says, I can't believe what I started with you guys to continue the tradition and get stronger every week. Frank, God bless you and your family. And I'll see you Saturday night at the Storm game. I'll see you Saturday. Call me when you get in the city or go to dinner.
Okie doke. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women, police and fire services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, please just say thank you to them. It means a world of good to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Chief Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, and John Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Payne, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Bob Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Florida Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sunashene voratfet, hakuig again ma'ilma.
May God rest his soul. miss you. We love you. I know your birthday's coming up on Saturday. Happy birthday.